Ticket City presents Why You Go to the Game to see the Georgia Bulldogs.
People were rushing the field. The goalpost came down, and I was looking for him, make sure he was okay. When he got down there, he just kind of turned around and looked up there where we were and just kind of put his hands up in the air like, yeah, I finally made it on the field, you know. But it was such a great game for Georgia to stop that streak.
Put yourself in the action with Ticket City. Visit onlineathens.com/dogbites and click tickets. From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports on Dog Bites.
Touchdown, Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome in. It's another podcast edition here. Mark Weiser, UGA beat writer for the Athens Banner, here with Ryan Dennis, and it is UMass week.
Yeah.
And that's Ryan, a little bit of enthusiasm.
Yeah, man.
I'm ready for this UMass week with the 4 weeks on the road, including an off-week trip out of town, and then the Auburn showdown. I'm a little worn out, but not as much as the Georgia basketball team, maybe the men's team, as they left Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina on Tuesday afternoon for a Tuesday game against Temple at 7 o'clock. So 5.5 hours before the game, they arrived in Philadelphia. I don't know if that's enough time to grab a cheesesteak or to go back to the hotel and crash. But I will say, next time I would just suggest maybe the best way to travel is by train. I took an Atlanta to Trenton, New Jersey train, something like that. I don't remember exactly where it was in New Jersey, but this is back in the day for a No-Show Marino feature. And why, Ryan, did I take a train?
I don't know why you would, because right, I have a story of why you wouldn't want to take a train.
All right, here's why I took a train. Because No-Show, I learned as I did some reporting on this, when he came down for his official visit, or maybe it wasn't an official visit, I can't remember, it might have just been a summer camp thing, he took a train from New Jersey to, it wasn't Atlanta, it was somewhere in North Georgia, whatever train stop in a little town it was, and then he got picked up and got taken to Athens from there. So I wanted to recreate the experience of what No-Show did. And
you enjoyed yourself?
I did not really enjoy the trip. It was an overnight trip, and yeah. It gets a little cold sometimes on the train. You need to grab a blanket, and there's interesting folks around on one of those 16-hour train rides or whatever, but
yeah, exactly.
And I can all tie it back to the modern times, because No-Show Marino was in Sanford Stadium on Saturday as he was representing the 2008 Sugar Bowl champion Bulldogs 10 years after their win over Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. The big blackout,
wait,
second round.
Wait, did I say that wrong? Wait a second. Was that the
2007 08 Sugar Bowl was the
right. Was wait, the, but what was he getting honored for then?
Yeah, I don't know. I just know
all right,
that
now I'm confused.
We have confused ourselves.
He was there for some 10-year anniversary.
I do know that they had several guys there, and they omitted Davin Bellamy, and so for last year, and then they had to bring back Davin next TV timeout to a roaring crowd as they introduced Davin.
Yeah, I was
Davin.
Wondering why he got and there, you know, I'm not gonna. I mean, they did say a Bulldog great, Davin Bellamy, and yeah. Hey, speaking of like announcements during the game, this was not. I wouldn't really plan to talk about this, but now that I can just think about it, I kind of tweeted beforehand. I kind of liked the idea of this sausage company promoting a deal where you threw a football from 30 yards, maybe it was, and you get, was it, how much did you get, a million?
No, it's like a million.
Yeah, and the woman that did it, she, I mean, it was a big ask because she didn't come close to
making it. She shot-putted it toward the Eckerd's farm.
But it was weird because, I mean, clearly it was, there was a time it was supposed to happen, and I guess they went to a TV timeout, and there was an Auburn player right on the same side of the field that was in some kind of pain from some kind of injury, and it was a weird scene as they're doing this promotion as he's getting attended to, and I think there was some booing from Auburn fans.
Yeah, well, judging by the Twitter reaction, too, Auburn fans were not taken kindly to it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, yeah, I won't even mention the name of the sausage company because I don't think they want to be kind of looked at as selling their product during an injury timeout.
That was awkward. It was awkward all the way around. The fact that they brought it out as the guy's injured and the lady's attempts.
I probably should have said this early on, but we got a special guest today. You may have heard of him. Aaron Murray, the former Georgia quarterback great, is here in a little bit to talk the Bulldogs, college football, and rivalries, which he might have an interesting take on that, and it'll be good to catch up with Aaron. But let's start out with what we'll be doing in 2028 to 2030. The question I have is, does Austin City Limits have a concert schedule yet? Because I'm all in, as Georgia will be going to Texas. I don't remember what year it is. Is that the 2029? No.
I don't know. I booked us flights, though. I think it's 2028 and 2029.
Yeah, you can't book flights like even 2 years out of advance, I think. I don't think you can.
Oh, well.
Or even book hotels. I don't know how early you can do that kind of stuff. But usually these things are kind of silly so far out. But I think it's fair to assume that Kirby Smart may still be coaching Georgia then if he hasn't gone to the NFL. Or retired early with 4 national titles and just gone to his Lake Oconee house and decided to,
live the life.
Yeah, or maybe he's gone to Bama. Maybe Saban's retired and they came to him and offered him something that Georgia can't. I don't know what that would be.
Always bringing up the negatives, Mark.
No, I think Georgia fans like the fact that their coach may be pursued by others because it just means he's doing a good job.
That is true.
All right, Texas, I like the idea. It's a home and home. And I have not been to a game in, I think it's called Darrell K. Royal Stadium. I don't know if it's a K in there or not. But I've been around the stadium when it wasn't football season. And it's a great town. There's food trucks downtown. There's Tex-Mex. There's music. What is their thing? Let Austin Be Weird or something? Have you been to Texas?
I've been to Texas. I've flown into Dallas.
All right.
And that's the only time I've been in there, but. And I drove up there. I drove up to Oklahoma City. But, I'm looking forward to that in 10 years if we're all still around.
San Antonio's not far away either. So that will be a new first time. Was that the first time for Texas? I'm trying to remember. Has Georgia played at Texas?
I was trying to think back.
Yes, Georgia has. I think they. I can't remember now. I should have done more research. Go to online Athens. Look at the story I wrote. Georgia has not hosted Texas. Texas, I think, in their announcement did say they had, but it turned out that game was in Atlanta. Not sure why. And then, of course, they played in a bowl game in 1984 season, or maybe it was the 84 bowl game in an 83 season. I can't.
10-9 was the score. That's what I remember.
Yeah. So that'll be good. And then Clemson will have like 3 games in 6 years, the 2024 Chick-fil-A kickoff classic, and then a home-and-home deal as well. Georgia fans that I've seen, for some reason, are not jacked up about playing in Clemson. Maybe they didn't have a good experience back in 2013 when they went there. But
I don't know. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me because, for years and years, you always heard that they need to be playing every year. So that would only, be logical to play home and away if you're going to set up that series. So, I think they need to play it more often.
All right. So I was looking because I was doing the story on UMass right when they released the Texas thing, which we knew the Texas thing was going to happen. But I looked up, as far as I could tell, no team in the SEC this season is playing more than one Power 5 conference team, and Georgia is playing Georgia Tech, and then we know the rest of the non-conference slate is not very appealing, including UMass. So to have 3 Power 5 conference teams that Georgia has scheduled in 2029, which is Clemson, Texas, and Georgia Tech, that's interesting to me. Will it happen 10 years from now? It's not going to surprise me if one of those 3 games, and it's not going to be Georgia Tech, is canceled or moved to a different season. Maybe it's a placeholder now. Maybe, who knows, if there will be like 4 16-team conferences, if the SEC will go to 9 league games by then. They got to negotiate a new TV contract. Who knows if that's going to be part of the negotiations to get better inventory on their product that they can put out on whichever network grabs that thing, assuming it's CBS again. But I would say that Georgia Tech is not going off the schedule. I just checked to make sure, like, in case for some reason that's why you schedule those other two. But what do you think? And I'd say give us Michigan, Oregon, Ohio State, Wisconsin. Those are some of the places I'd like to see Georgia play.
Yeah, I'm all for traveling to different places. But, what was the Ohio State? They set that up, about 6-7 years ago for 10 years down the line, and it, of course, flaked out. And I was kind of shocked the Notre Dame matchup stayed around, too, after all those years planning ahead. But
I think the Ohio State game came off the schedule because Urban Meyer got hired at Ohio State.
And, oh, there you go.
And he didn't necessarily want to play that game. So,
well, that just shows, you know, proves how much can change in a 10-year span. And, you know, like one of our colleagues, I believe, mentioned yesterday, SEC might be a 9-game, you know, conference, you know, schedule by then. So,
well, I just mentioned that, but someone else.
Yeah, I know. Well, you too. But who knows what will happen?
Yeah, I mean, will Dabo be coaching Clemson? Maybe he's the one that's going to Alabama. You know, Texas's coach has been in the news this week for not great things, and who knows what will happen there. So we'll find out. Meanwhile, we know that Auburn will be on the Georgia schedule every year unless that changes again, which, you know, who knows? They're going to look at the SEC schedule. But let's talk about this Auburn game from this past weekend. Have we mentioned I guess we mentioned only about the injury timeout stuff that was going on, but final score was 27-10 Bulldogs. And another year when Auburn scores 7 points in the first quarter and then doesn't score a touchdown for the last three quarters. It's just kind of crazy considering, you know, when the game is played in Auburn, it's played in, well, actually the game in Atlanta was kind of the same deal. But Kirby Smart mentioned about how Gus Malzahn scripts well, you know, maybe the first 2-3 series. And then Georgia, you know, I don't know if they make adjustments or they just, you know, handle them. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Were you expecting it to play out that Auburn would kind of look pretty feeble on offense after, I mean, they didn't run the ball against Texas A&M, but then they didn't really run the ball well against Georgia either.
Right. Well, in last year, after the way they looked against Georgia at Auburn when they just dominated, and then they come out in the SEC championship and, you know, pretty much push it down Georgia's throats and score again, you know, you think they're going to be just rolling over them in the SEC championship, and then they don't score, you know, the rest of the game. And then at home the other day, or at, you know, Sanford Stadium the other day, it's kind of the same thing. And I don't know. I kind of did a double take when Kirby said that about Gus Malzahn's offenses and how you have to, you know, just kind of let the first couple of drives happen, and then you settle in and you play. Like, it was almost like a shot, like, well, he doesn't do much, you know, after he does the same thing after he games plans for a team. And so that's how you can kind of, you know, figure out what they're doing and stop it pretty easily. So I thought that was a very interesting comment by Kirby there.
Jake Fromm on third down, deadly, sort of. I mean, touchdown pass to Tyler Simmons, pass across the field to Hardman. For you know, what was that? That was like a 3rd and 19 or something. I don't know what it was, but then the fourth down pass to Terry Godwin. He's looking. It's certainly helping that they're giving him the pass protection, or he's avoiding making plays with his feet, so he doesn't, you know, end up throwing a pick or getting sacked. But he's they're really converting on third downs now. And again, in that game, you know, obviously a different story against LSU, but 3 third-down touchdown passes against Florida. So from playing as you want him to towards the end of the season, and, you know, will it translate to Bama? That was a question.
Yeah, you never know. It's kind of funny how it seemed like that Florida game was when that all kind of started, when people started taking notice about, you know, when they said that about 3rd and Grantham in their game notes. And it was almost like Georgia took it as a challenge. In the last few games, they've been pretty much lights out with Jake throwing the ball.
All right, DeAndre Swift, 186 rushing yards. So good to know that there's not the Athens Banner Herald game day jinx, because I had the cover story on Swift this past week, and then he went out and had his 3rd straight career game against Auburn. Another big touchdown, 77 yards. And then I didn't even actually notice this one until I watched the replay, that he just left an Auburn guy looking as helpless as those 2 Kentucky guys. And this was not on the touchdown run. This is on another run.
Yeah.
So I guess that's par for the course with Swift. He's going to be making these cuts that are just going to make these defenders look silly.
Well, the funny – or not funny thing, but, you know, Kirby keeps downplaying his injury. But if he had, you know, surgery on a groin, I mean, that's hard to come back from. And, he, you know, Kirby keeps saying – I thought he, you know, playing well early in the year. That's what Kirby keeps saying. But something was off, and I think these last 3 games, man, he's back and he's fully healthy, and he is showing it. And I mean, those cuts that he makes, I mean, it's terrifying if you're a defender trying to come up and tackle that guy. And then when he gets open field and can pull away from guys, he shows that speed. And it was funny to watch him back on the replay. You know, his dad was just right there in the crowd when he crossed the goal line. That was a great reaction when he looked up at his dad, and his dad's doing like a cutthroat, like, yeah, you got him, boy. And so, yeah, it's good to see Swift healthy, and, you know, with that combo of him and Holyfield, that's, man, that's, you know, you think about Sony and Chubb last year and what they were able to do, but, you know, these two guys are, you know, kind of getting in that same type of groove now.
Did get a chance to speak to Darren Swift in that story that I mentioned.
Yeah,
and very close relationship, obviously, with father, son, and then the mother as well. And sure, it's not cheap to get, you know, from Philadelphia to Athens or some of these road trips. He told me he did drive, though, to Kentucky, I guess a little bit more northern.
They don't take a train?
No, but I'm going to recommend that.
There you go.
They didn't have... Well, no, driving's fine. It's not... You're not
I'd rather
with,
drive than take that
You're not
train.
Dealing with... Did we even mention when we talked about the Georgia basketball thing? They got stuck in the mud in Anderson, South Carolina when they were taxiing, not when they were on the I guess, you know, not at full speed,
not
about
take
to take off,
off
yeah. deal. So you got to imagine that's going to impact the kind of their leg weary or just
yeah.
sitting in buses and airplanes. And anyway, we'll find out. But another notable thing that happened in the Auburn game, Eric Stokes replaces Tyson Campbell. And I was kind of, you know, after that Missouri game, I was a little surprised that Stokes sort of disappeared in terms of defensive snaps. And
yeah,
they,
I can't believe that.
They went back to Campbell, you know, even after, well, not, did I say Missouri game? I meant more like the LSU game, because the LSU game is when over 100 yards probably
yeah,
of passing against Stokes, rather not Stokes, Campbell, but... you know, I guess you want to stick with the five-star and know that he's going to be, he's an ultra-talented guy, Campbell is, and that you're going to learn on the job. So it'd be interesting to see. I mean, UMass is a game where you can play both these guys, probably get him a lot of snaps, but, you know, probably notable, maybe. I don't know. Eric Stokes is one of the two guys that's coming out on Tuesday night as the defensive players meet with the media, so maybe that is an indication that he's, you know, obviously had a good game and had a big pass breakup there in the end zone, so it'll be interesting to see how they handle Tyson Campbell. What is your take on that? If you are Mel Tucker, what are you doing with your secondary there?
Well, I've been saying it's odd to me that, I mean, he just disappeared totally after that Missouri game, because, you know, he had a couple big plays and they praised, you know, the hard work and effort. And then, you know, I would even think on some of the nickel or, you know, money, dime, whatever terms they use in the secondary, that, you know, he wouldn't even get a shot or a look at coming in on some of those positions as well. So, I was surprised he didn't play more. You know, when he came in the other day, I didn't know if there was an injury to Tyson or something that might have been the reason he played more. But Kirby said it was pretty much just they wanted the best guy in there, and so they turned to Stokes. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see this week, you know, how both are, you know, played. And if, you know, I'm sure they'll, like you said, they'll kind of interchange at that position just to kind of have competition going into the Tech game.
All right, the offensive line, the story continues. Somebody's banged up or multiple guys. This time it's Kendall Baker. The guy that was into the last game, probably more of a performance issue, it seemed, with Cade Mays. Now, Mays was coming off his shoulder stinger and, you know, didn't play. I think he was pulled maybe in the second quarter, I'm thinking. Didn't practice Monday. Didn't see Baker out there either. It is UMass week. Have we said that? Yes, it is. So I don't know if these guys are playing. I'm guessing they're not playing Saturday. But Big Ben Cleveland was out there working first team right guard. And he did come in late in the game when Baker got injured. He was already in the game on the punt protection, which is an interesting role for Mr. Cleveland. So good to see Ben Cleveland back. Probably a guy you're going to need against Alabama. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what they end up with come Georgia Tech, come Alabama, as they start to get guys healthy. I don't know exactly how long Baker might be out and how serious his injury was. Kirby didn't really get into that, but you know, he was an important sub that was available when Georgia needed him.
Yeah, and like you know, like I think I wrote after the Kentucky game, it's, you know, one guy comes out, you got another guy that can fill right in and just keep shuffling pieces around. And you know, I know Trey Hill had to come in late in that game, you know, for Gelliard at center after it was pretty well decided. But then, of course, he proved in the Kentucky game that he could play the entire game. So just got to keep an eye on that offensive line and see how they keep shuffling things around. But I do expect Ben to play for most of the game, you know, as much as they need him against UMass to kind of get to rust off a little bit and get back in the groove.
All right, the game's a 7. Let's see, what was the score at the end of the game there when Mr. Rodrigo Blankenship 27-10, and game's over. I was probably finishing up my story that posted right after the game. I was kind of, I probably peeked up to watch the fake field goal by Mr. Blankenship. Good play call in terms of the execution. It was just not a well-thrown ball by Blankenship, who fired over Isaac Nauta's, who was open on the play. But why do it then? I guess my first thought was, hey, maybe you got something up your sleeve and you want to show this look to Bama for some reason, because you got some other wrinkle in that, you know, formation or whatever. The prevailing opinion was more about, hey, they're, Kirby wants to stick it to Gus for his beat the dog crap out of them comment from last year's game at Auburn that was caught on camera. And then Kirby would basically, his response after the game was that he didn't really feel like it was a comfortable lead because it was still going to be a three-possession game with the field goal.
None of that made sense. There was 3 minutes left in the game.
And Auburn had scored 10 points.
He was trying to find a reason to make an excuse for it. But I don't know the reason, because to me, the bullcrap comment was, or the dog crap comment was, taken out on him in the SEC championship game. So I don't know. I didn't understand the play. I mean, it'd been nice if it worked for him, because it was, like you said, well designed and all, but I didn't believe his whole three score. And I don't even know if his math was totally right there. I was trying to do it in my head as he was saying it in the post game press conference, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, it would put them up 24 instead of 20.
It would have been 34-10.
Yeah, I get it, but I'm not. There was deeper meaning than that, and I'm not exactly sure what it was.
I mean, are you trying to impress the committee more in case you lose to Bama and you're a two-loss Georgia team and you want to get it? I don't know. All right, one more thing. I just want to say, looking back at the Auburn game, probably haven't written this much or anything, but it seems like Jonathan Ledbetter is a lot more active, making a lot more plays these last couple games. You definitely see him affecting the quarterback and getting into the backfield, that kind of thing. Ryan, what other takeaway might you have about the Georgia-Auburn game?
Nothing more than they just didn't look ahead to, say Alabama. I think the media kept trying to ask, or not us per se, but people within the media about Alabama. And, that could have been one that you overlook because of, Auburn's not having the best year. But I guess they do try to take it, one game at a time and whatnot, and try not to look ahead to anybody. And after a little bit of a slow start, or maybe a fast start by Auburn, however you want to look at it, Georgia didn't look ahead, or didn't let the early score bother them, and they pretty much pulled it out to the lead that everybody kind of expected them to win by. So they just didn't let anything in the future determine that game, and went ahead and took care of business.
All right, let's bring in our guest, the former Georgia quarterback. All right, joining us now is Aaron Murray, former Bulldog quarterback and recent inductee into the Georgia-Florida Hall of Fame, currently a CBS Sports Network analyst and podcast host with former Bulldog punter Drew Butler on the Punt and Pass podcast. Aaron, how are you?
Doing good. It's been a fun season for everyone, and now just came down to the end of it. So this is going to be an exciting next few weeks. I know all the Georgia fans are pretty pumped to kind of hard to get through UMass, get to Georgia Tech, and then get to Atlanta and play Alabama. So it's going to be fun. I got a couple of good games left myself. So like I said, a very, very, very eventful end of the season.
Well, I want to ask you first with some of the scheduling news on the Georgia front. I was looking back. I guess you maybe played at Colorado in 2010 and Clemson in 2013.
Yeah.
That's the last game Georgia played at Clemson. What do you make of Clemson coming home and home in something like 10 years from now and then back on the schedule there, and then also home and home with Texas?
They're both awesome. I think it's good. I think it's good for the programs. I think it helps with the SEC. I know there's always everyone complaining that, there's not enough tough out-of-conference scheduling going on, and I always say, listen, because you look at the conference, and it's just a bear to get through. I mean, there's so many good teams within the SEC. But I think it's fun. You see Georgia in the past, the way they've traveled to all these games. I mean, to Notre Dame, the way they traveled to LSU, the way they traveled to the Rose Bowl, the National Championship. I mean, it just, they get excited about these big games, whether they're conference games, non-conference games, going to different venues. So I love it. I think it's going to be a great time to get two programs that, you know, should be good in 10 years. You're anticipating Clemson and Texas supposed to be very good and always be good. And I think it's fun for, like I said, the fan bases to go check out those stadiums and kind of mix it up a little bit. So I'm looking forward to those games.
Yeah, Aaron, of course, you know, I guess nowadays you watch a lot of football from the booth and still a big college football fan and all. And, of course, you went up against Alabama, you know, in the 2012 SEC championship, a heartbreaker to a lot of our Georgia fans out there. But, you know, Aaron, nobody's given Georgia a chance, you know, pretty much anybody a chance against Alabama this year. You know, what would be the keys for Georgia to pull that upset? And, you know, do you think it could happen?
I think it could. I mean, I think there's a handful of teams that could possibly take on Alabama. Listen, you know, Alabama is elite. They're elite at everything besides pretty much kicking. Their struggles there. I think Clemson, Michigan, and Georgia could possibly, and this is a huge, you know, question mark, you know, could maybe take them down. But you need to play. First of all, you have to play mistake-free football. You can't turn the ball over. And I think you have to own the time of possession. I think that's the key, is be able to run the football, because you turn on the film right now of Alabama each every week and you look up and all of a sudden it's 21-0, and that's because they score quick, they get a three and out or a turnover, short field, and then they score right away again, and all of a sudden it's 14-0, it's 21-0, and then your game plan completely changes. So I think in order to compete with Alabama, in order to maybe give yourself a chance to play all four quarters and possibly win, you got to establish the line of scrimmage. I mean, you got to dominate. You got to get a couple first downs at least every single possession. That way you're punting the football and forcing Alabama to drive 80-plus yards. Like I said, if you give Alabama a short field position, whether it's a three and out or a turnover, they're too dynamic. They take advantage of the energy in the crowd. They take advantage of the momentum, and they can score quickly. That's how you do it, dominate. And I think you look at Georgia, the way they're running the football right now, Swift, Holyfield, and honestly, and it may be a little biased, but Swift right now may be the best running back in all of college football. I mean, he is everything you want, explosive, strong, has the speed to break away downfield. So I think those dynamics, and that you get Georgia's offensive line healthy before that game, I think they can muscle up at the line of scrimmage, get some yardage, like I said, make Alabama sit on the sideline offensively and then have to force them to drive the entire length of the field. I think that's how Georgia can possibly win that game in Atlanta.
Aaron, of course, everyone knows about your SEC passing records, but you did have 16 rushing touchdowns. So I'm going to ask you some questions about the goal line issues for Georgia. What's going on there? Do you have any answers about how to solve that, and why do you think it's happening?
It's tough. I mean, when you get inside the red zone, I mean, we all know that the field shrinks. It's the windows for the passing game are even smaller. You have to be more precise, more accurate. I just got to take advantage of the one-on-one opportunities. I think if teams want to load the box to stop the run, you know, Jake Fromm is one of the best at the back shoulder fade. They're giving his guys an opportunity to go up there and, you know, win those one-on-one opportunities. So I think you got to take advantage more of those. I do think you can continue to be more creative with Justin Fields, not only running the football, but I mean, I'm not in their practice every week, I don't know, but you know, from the times I saw him in preseason and spring, fall camp, it's even his limited throwing throughout the season, he's an accurate quarterback. He can make plays with his arms. So I think if you can make it a little bit different with him, where he's not just coming in, you know, inside the red zone just to run the football, but actually maybe throw it, I think that can loosen up teams as well.
Well, of course, you know, talking about Fields, you know, what have you seen out of his development, and, you know, how do you think he's handled the, you know, being behind Jake, and how do you think, I guess, in that sense, that Jake has handled that as well? Do you think that, you know, it's all going well for the both of them and all?
I think Fromm's handled it well, and I kind of anticipated he would. I mean, the kid is as focused as can be. He's an incredible leader. He's not going to, you know, even if he is upset, he's not going to show that to his teammates. I mean, if he's upset that he's getting taken out of the red zone or taken out on third down, you know, he understands that guys look to me as they're the football team, and I can't show any kind of emotion of being down or upset or pissed off. I mean, like I said, he goes out there, whatever his role is, he's going to accept it from the coaches, and he's going to go out there and execute. So I applaud him, because it's a tricky situation. You know, it throws your rhythm off a little bit. Obviously, you want to be in there because, you know, third downs and red zones, I mean, that's what you preach. I mean, those are situational football that you want to be excellent in, that you have fun in, and really get the game plan. And when you're not a part of that fully, it can be, like I said, a little frustrating. So I think he's done a tremendous job of handling the situation. I think Fields has done what he needs to do to earn playing time, to earn the trust of the coaches and his teammates. And I think for him, too, the same thing is you never hear him that he's upset or complaining, whether it's in the locker room or on the field. He's accepted that, hey, listen, I knew I was coming into a situation where Jake Fromm took this team to the national championship. He's an excellent quarterback, and it's going to be tough to take over this position, especially in my first year where I don't really know the offense as well as he does. So, like I said, both guys have handled it well. It's going to be interesting for me looking at that position this offseason. You know, how does the battle go this spring? You know, does Fields somehow separate himself, or does Jake Fromm continue to be the starter? And then whatever happens, do both guys stay for next year? I think it's going to be very difficult. If once again Justin Fields is not the guy after spring, for me, if I was him, I would probably start looking around because he's a competitor, and the last thing he wants to do is, you know, sit for another year and possibly two more years.
You're talking about Fromm, you know, finishing up his sophomore season with another run to the SEC championship game. What are you most impressed with him? 25 games or something, whatever it is, into his career at Georgia, and where can he get even better?
I think his accuracy. I mean, the kid is completing, one thing, over 60% of his passes or close to it. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's his trust, and that's what's most important for me to see, and I love seeing, is he trusts his guys, receivers, running backs, tight ends, to go make plays. You know, and sometimes as a quarterback, you get so worried and you give the defense so much credit of, man, they got great DBs or safeties or linebackers, and, you know, I'm going to have to really sit balls in or keep them away from those guys. And he's like, hey, listen, I got great receivers. If I throw a 50-50 ball, I feel great knowing that my guy is going to go make a play for me, and the outcome is going to be positive for Georgia. So I think that it's tough to learn that your guys are better ball catchers. They're better at judging, especially the deep ones. And you just got to give them a chance to go out there and make plays. And if he did that last year, and he continues to do that once again this year. Then also the lack of turnovers is key. I mean, he understands that this defense has been playing really well the past two seasons. The run game has been absolutely tremendous. I just can't lose the game for us. I have to be accurate, and I have to not turn the ball over. And the way this team's built, we're going to win football games. Run game, defense, and then accuracy from the quarterback position. And he's played his role extremely well. And I just want to see him continue to do that. I think there's not anything for me that's glaring, like, you know, he can't complete the post or he can't complete the go ball or his timing. I think his anticipation's great. I think he studies his little butt off every day during the week, and that's why he's so accurate, and that's why he knows where he's going. So I wouldn't change anything. I think he's doing a heck of a job.
All right, here's where we need your insider information, your experience, your behind the scenes. You know, of course, Georgia has UMass this week, and, you know, the coaches and Kirby all say, you know, oh, it's the next game, it's important, you know, that's what we're focused on. But how much, you know, studying and game planning is there for Tech and even Alabama at this point? Or are they really telling us the truth when they're, you know, focusing just on UMass?
Oh, they really are. I mean, there's no looking ahead. I mean, especially now with one loss, you can't have another slip-up. I mean, you have to win out if you want to make it into the playoffs. And then we all know, even the playoffs, there's going to be a lot of teams with one loss. It's a beauty contest. I mean, it's not only about winning, but winning the games you're supposed to win by a ton of points and going out there and dominating. So I think everyone's focused. And then obviously when you get to Georgia Tech next week, you have to be focused. With that kind of offense, if you're thinking ahead to Georgia Tech, or excuse me, if you're thinking ahead to Alabama, all of a sudden, Georgia Tech can hit the clock. They can run the ball right down your throat, and then you could be playing behind with limited possessions on the offensive side of the football. So I think especially that game with the uniqueness, the rivalry, there's a ton of focus. So I don't see this team looking ahead. I think they have great leadership from Kirby to Jake Fromm to other guys on the defense that are going to make sure that they're focused in and ready to go. And and they understand that, hey, listen, Alabama still has to play a tough game against Auburn, you know, and they're going to be focused on that because if they don't want to lose to Auburn and get upset in that rivalry as well.
All right, Georgia Tech next week, as you mentioned. Where did that rivalry rank for you versus Florida, Auburn, Tennessee? I know you're a Tampa guy, so I imagine Florida was number one, but, you know, what about Tech?
It was there because you didn't want to lose the Tech, and it's kind of, I hate to say it, but it's a little embarrassing. I mean, you know, that's the game you're supposed to win. You were better talent-wise, better coach, so you should always beat Georgia Tech. But there's so many great rivalries in the SEC. I mean, for me, I guess most hated in my mind would be Auburn, just what happened after my freshman season, that football game. So Auburn, Florida, Tennessee a little bit, and then Texas probably right behind there. Along with South Carolina, I mean, I don't think there's much hate, and we got our butt whoops a lot when I played South Carolina. We were 1-3, so it was kind of painful going there. I always thought that was a fun football game, so no ill will, but yeah, I'd probably put Georgia Tech around 4, maybe 5.
Wow, interesting. You know, when you think back, you know, these games, I guess good or bad, what's the one that stands out? You know, I mean, I think some big games, you know, in Sanford, LSU, you know, against South Carolina, 13, I think it was. But what stands out in your mind when you think back, you know, good or bad, I guess? What's the game that you say, you know, that was one I'll never forget?
I think the LSU game. Obviously, I'll never forget the SEC championship game against Alabama and being up 11 points and just coming up just short, and then obviously you look and see Notre Dame the next week in the national championship game, and Alabama just crushes them. And we were built identical to Alabama, great defense, very dominant run game, and two quarterbacks that could, you know, manage the game really well and be accurate and throw a couple touchdowns here or there. So I was like, man, we would have done the same exact thing, which kind of stinks. But the LSU game at home, and not just the win, but just the energy in the stadium throughout the game, and then, you know, even being in the locker room after the game, I remember Coach Vogel came running back in saying, get your butts out there, everyone's still there, and then, you know, 15, 20 minutes after the game's already over, we walk back on the field and every fan is still in their seats. You know, it just was such a fun game to be a part of, whether you're a player, whether you're a fan, coach, whoever, and to share that celebration afterwards back on the field with the entire fan base was pretty special.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Aaron, we appreciate you joining us, and we will tell our listeners to check out Aaron in the Booth on the 17th. Is that Friday night? I guess it's Friday night, right? Or is that Saturday?
No, Saturday.
So okay,
I'll be,
Saturday.
I'll be covering the
San Diego State at Fresno State.
So pretty big game in the Mountain West.
Yeah, 5-1 Fresno State. So Mountain West implications there. Aaron, appreciate you joining us, and have a great week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
All right, thanks to Aaron Murray for joining us, and let's wrap up the show with a little bit of various topics. First, congrats to Nathaniel Maddox of Carlton, Georgia. Where's Carlton, Georgia?
Just right down the road.
It is?
Right up 72. Yeah.
Oh, I need to go. What do they got there? Anything?
There's maybe a post office.
Okay. He went 10 out of 12 in the picks that we do. It's a weekly picks contest. Can't remember the name.
Wiser than wiser.
I was 9 out of 12, which I guess I almost won the $50 tailgate package. That am I eligible? I've asked that question. Ryan, how did you do? And am I still ahead of you? Where does that stand?
You know, I hadn't checked. That was bad on my part.
That means that I am ahead of you.
Yeah. Well, I was up by 3, I think, going into that.
It's funny how you don't check when I'm ahead, maybe.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, well, so go to onlineathens.com, make your picks for this week. And surprisingly or not, it's definitely not surprising, we do not have the Georgia-UMass game on there because it's a 44-point spread. Mm-hmm. This is not point spreads, though. This is just you make
straight
your pick.
Up.
Yeah, but you do have to make one of the picks you have to do is you have to put a score in, and that's for the big Iowa State-Texas game, which should be a good one this week.
Yeah. What do you have in that? Can you give us a little...
Who I picked?
A little look at it. Well, this is your freebie of the week, everybody.
You know what? I need to look right here at what I sent you because I can't even remember.
I think I had Texas 38-35 because it's played at Texas. But, you know, Iowa State has that new quarterback they've thrown in there. you know, we had our Oconee County guy there for a little while, Zeb, who was putting up big numbers for Iowa State, but hadn't really paid close attention. But I know they went to another guy, and he's been leading them pretty well.
All right, here we go.
Lately.
Since you asked, I pulled it up. I got Iowa State winning 27-24.
Ooh, I bet that's an upset.
It might be. So check it out and make your picks. And win a $50. What's in that $50 gift pack? Do you know any of the things?
No, you get a gift certificate somewhere, and you get a I could walk in the office behind us and see, but you, right. You get a little like a little handy pack of some sort. It's a neat little deal. People seem to be raving about it.
All right, the Temple game is tonight, and Georgia basketball game. So we can't talk about that as much as what we saw against Savannah State, which is the first impressions of Tom Crean coaching these Bulldogs. It's a fun up and down, fan friendly style, up tempo, even more up tempo because Savannah State just launched 90 some shots and like 60 some 3-pointers, and they don't use much of the shot clock. And Georgia scored 110 points. They set a record. And was the most points since 99, maybe? I don't know.
Most points since 99. Most first time to 100 since 2007. Fun to see.
I think, you know, there's a good number of guys on this team that fit the style, even though they weren't recruited by Tom Crean. I don't know if Derek Obeyde necessarily is your ideal guy for up and down. But, he had some plays around the basket. But, and also they announced a record crowd for a home opener, and that might be generous. I don't think it was 9,000. Do you?
No. Well, they had the doubleheader with the women, right. I can see how the numbers could be skewed a tad bit.
Yeah. So,
but it was a good crowd. I won't lie. I've seen much less before.
Speaking of a basketball school, Temple is UMass coming to town here to play football, and they were blown out by BYU this past week
in football.
Correct.
Yes.
Not the worst team Georgia has ever played in recent years, but, huge mismatch against the number 5 team in the country. I think the UMass coach, I know he has said that this is the best team that UMass has ever played, Georgia.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, the worst game ever, wasn't that Idaho State? Didn't they come rolling in about 6-7 years ago, and they were 119 out of 120 in FCS or something like that, from what I recall?
Yeah, there's been those kind of games. I need to pull up the media guide to remember, but, UMass beat Connecticut, which used to be good.
Oh,
didn't they make a Fiesta Bowl like a long time ago? But they're not good anymore. So
that's true.
They do have a good wideout, though, that can make a lot of plays downfield. Going to be interesting to see whether – Georgia doesn't give up many big plays in the passing game. So this guy, I think, had like 300 yards receiving was it against Liberty maybe, triple overtime game? Maybe that was that game. I don't know, but – should be a good chance to see. One of the Georgia players was saying there's a lot of buzz about guys getting a chance to get some extra PT. Of course, Kirby would not say that, but maybe I'm looking to see Channing Tindall, Quay Walker, Jamari Salyer, James Cook, some guys that don't get as much playing time. Ryan, give me two names of guys you want to see that don't necessarily get too many snaps except for special teams.
Well, you mentioned Channing Tindall. He had that big play against Kentucky where he got the sack, which I guess it was kind of not odd to see him in there, but, in such a big game and a big moment, he came in and, made a nice play there on the sack. But, he's a guy I've been watching for a while that, could come in and, he's just got that big body and he's fast and he seems like that guy that can take over that linebacker spot that kind of, I guess Monty's holding down now and Monty, will probably still hold it down, but Channing's the guy that, can make plays. And, I know we've seen Brenton Cox play a lot this year, but he's been kind of injured. The other day I was watching the tent, and he kept walking in and out of it, and I was confused at what was happening, and he wasn't playing much. But it'd be interesting to see if he can come back and stay healthy this week. But, who's the guy that maybe you think could, on offense, that you think could maybe have a role that we hadn't seen this year?
I just gave my list. James Cook is the guy I want to see. Because, it's not easy to get carries these days when you have Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift, and even Brian Herring's getting some carries, to give those guys a break. So James Cook, I want to see him. And then Salyer was a big-time offensive line recruit and should have a chance for him to play a lot as well. that will be it for this podcast edition. You know, I was just thinking, Ron, we hadn't talked about it, but I don't know if we're going to have a Tuesday podcast next week since we got things kind of switched around due to the holiday. Maybe it'll be a Wednesday. Check your Twitter feed for updates on that. But we will have a podcast as the Georgia Tech Georgia game, or should I say Georgia Tech, rolls on next week. And Ryan, we'll talk about turkey and stuffing and all that stuff next week. And thanks everyone for joining us. And
OnlineAthens.com. Go there and read all the stuff.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your week.